Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Copy in Copenhagen. My name is Owen and I'm here to introduce a very special episode this week. Listeners may know that our very own Abby Wamba does another podcast with comedian Sophie Hagen called Help Hole. In Help Hole, Sophie and Abby take it in turns to read self-help books and explain what they learned to each other. Now, a few weeks ago, Sophie Hagen was over here in this very studio to record an episode of Help Hole, and the book they covered was none other than Little Book of Hygge. Now, given that there's nothing more quintessentially Danish than the Little Book of Hygge, we thought it'd be more than appropriate for the Copy in Copenhagen listeners to hear that episode. So please sit back and enjoy this introduction episode to Abby Wamba's and Sophie Hagen's Help Hole.
Sophie, happy International Happiness Day.
Thank you. I thought you'd never tell me that.
Sophie, why are Danish people so happy?
Socialism, equality, functioning infrastructure, high taxes, spikes, free healthcare.
Okay, on today's episode,
free education, funding for the arts, rye bread, high quality produce.
Today's episode, we're talking about the Little Book of Hygge.
Oh, yeah, and Hygge.
I'm Abby Wamba. I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm a parent. I'm a writer. I'm a liver of a life in Denmark.
And I'm Sophie Hagen, stand-up comedian and author. And I used to live in Denmark, but now I live in London in the UK. And you might be asking yourself, why would you move from Denmark to the UK? And to that I say, yeah.
This is Help Hole, our podcast where wherever somebody says, what's the name of your podcast, we say Help Hole, and they go, Help Hole?
That poor woman. We've come, I don't know if you can tell by the tones in our voices, we've come straight from the Happiness Museum in Copenhagen. We went on a little field trip, and Abby, I don't know if I'm using this word correctly, barged.
Barged
into the Happiness Museum and said, can we get in for free? We have a podcast.
And I'd already emailed them.
And the sweet woman behind the counter said, oh, I don't know about that. It's my first day. And Abby was like, we've already asked and they said no. And she was like, oh, then I don't know.
I think you would be surprised how far. I don't think you would be surprised. I feel like you've seen it in action some, but like that kind of barging gets me pretty far in life.
Yeah, it was terrifying. We were all terrified.
No, friendly barging.
It was very friendly barging.
Friendliest barge around.
I was surprised that you didn't just say, just go in.
She wanted to so bad. I didn't give her a chance because I'm so friendly. I was like, no. Take Sophie's money.
Take the podcast money. This is what the Patreons buy us. It's a trip to the Happiness Museum so we can bring you all of the information you need to know about how to do better as a human being.
Also, I just want to say, I think we'll probably talk a little bit more about the Happiness Museum later, but when we were leaving, the lady whose first day it was, she was like, wait, you've earned this. And she gave me a card that says, I am an official ambassador of happiness. She did not give one to Sophie.
She did not, because I'd left already and I didn't want to go back in because it was
the saddest. Wasn't like, wait, you miserable looking person, come back.
But can I say that little card you got, that little cardboard postcard you got that said Happiness Ambassador?
I'm sorry, my ID? Said, you mean my ID?
It said, you've been appointed the Happiness Ambassador by, and she hadn't put her name.
It was her first day. She didn't know her name yet. That would have been a good opportunity for you to laugh out loud.
I chuckled inside of myself ever so slightly. I think that's more laughter than you're used to. Help Hole. We're a bi-weekly podcast. If you choose to think that bi-weekly means every other week and not twice a week, the word means both things. So it's a really bad word.
Mm. And to counter that bad word, here are some good words. Sophie wrote this. And to counter that bad
a good sentence. And to counter, you just have to say it with possess.
And to counter that bad word, here are some good words.
Yep.
Our podcast, Help Hole, is a podcast where we take turns reading self-help books, and then we tell you and each other what we learned from them. I wrote a perfectly good script that Sophie ruined.
No, you didn't. You left the one from the last week. No, I wrote this.
Yeah, I can tell.
And if after that you're still thirsty for... Shut up. If after that you're still thirsty for more, you should go... I think there may have been a water reference earlier on that I'm no longer... That's no longer in there. You should join our Patreon on patreon.com/helphole, where you can keep this podcast going, keep it ad-free, and where you get full-length bonus episodes bi-weekly, as in every other week. But the other weeks, not the ones where the main episodes come out. I feel like we need better words.
Yeah, please excuse Sophie. This is her second language. She struggles with words, and this episode is recorded in Denmark.
By the way, I don't think people need to know that the whole thing isn't scripted.
The whole thing is not scripted.
It was the dream was to have a nice, fluent intro.
Fluid intro.
So you felt safe with us before we started yapping.
There was another water reference. Fluid intro. There it was. You found it. The thirsty for fluid intro.
That wasn't even planned.
Oh my God. Help hole. Okay, we're in real life in person now, though. So I feel like I am laughing harder. It feels like a different energy. It is really nice. It's nice to be in the same place
louder.
As you. I know. I'm having a nice time.
You're having a nice time. Is it because we went we went to the Happiness Museum?
I think so.
Was it contagious?
It's an International Day of Happiness.
Can you tell the people the great pieces of advice you gave me recently? You've given me two great pieces of advice this week. And I want you to tell people because it's something that... It was almost like when I read a self-help book and I'm like, this I will take with me.
Okay, well, first of all, tell us about the horrible time you've been having at your hotel.
Stop trying to go back to the script.
But we're improvising now. But we can't improvise the advice I gave you if people don't know what the problem you had that I was advising you
on. Okay. It was a very low sofa in my hotel. It was so close to the ground, and I had to wait an hour. And I sat down, and it was also the softest sofa in the world. So I was essentially sitting on the ground. And I left a message for Abby saying, I cannot get up. I can't get up. I don't know what to do. I genuinely don't know how to get up from this. Help. And then you said...
I made two suggestions. And they were based on the fact that if people aren't worried about you, they aren't going to notice. Or they're not going to mind what's happening. So either to just fall on the floor, but laugh, oh my God, I fell on the floor. So that no one's like, oh my God, are you okay? Like that would cause the awkwardness if they're like, whatever. Or to cast yourself upon the floor with purpose and act as though you are like looking for something under the thing. That was the advice that I gave you.
Yeah. I remember that as being better. I don't remember anything about like throwing myself violently on the ground, but I did like throw my phone a bit away, and then I was like, oh, gotta pick up my phone, and I like went down on my knees slowly and gently. And then while I was on my knees, I then took my bag up on the sofa so I looked like I was on the floor, like looking through my luggage. Mm-hmm. And then I used the bag to get all the way up.
I think that what you liked about that advice, and then later you decided not to go on an elevator with people.
Oh my God, that lift.
Yeah.
20 minutes I was waiting for the lift. 20 minutes.
Now we're going to have to hear about it for 20 more.
20 minutes. But do you understand how long 20 minutes is? It's so long.
It's really long.
To just wait. And then it opens and there's too many people in. And then it opened and there were two people in. So I could fit there, but I didn't want to.
Mm.
And they said, oh, are you going up? And I said, oh, no, don't worry about it. And then they went up and then realized, we're all going up to breakfast. So they're going to see me up there in whenever... The next lift comes, they're going to see me. They're going to be like, oh, you just didn't want to share the lift with us? And then I felt really bad and I didn't know what to do. And then I asked you.
And I said, when you see them, you just think to yourself in your head, oh, it's good I went back for that thing or whatever. Whatever reason you gave yourself for that you didn't go into the elevator with them. But they aren't going to think the thing that you're thinking. I think that this is the kind of pep talk I would give my kid. And I'm trying to like understand what it is about it that you really liked. But I think it's that the basic idea is, unless people are like worried about you or think that you are acting weird, they aren't clocking it. So if you just think to yourself, I had a reason to not go in that elevator.
Yeah, if I pretend in my head that I had to go back to my room and get something and then go back, I wouldn't be worried about them.
The only
reason...
could
sense that.
Yes, and the only reason they would be thinking, why didn't that person get in the elevator with us, is if you were making a face to them like, what am I going to, how am I going to explain that I didn't get in the elevator with them?
If I make eye contact with them and I say, it's not because you smell.
Yeah.
They would maybe pick up on.
But I think it's like, in general, I think that people, their expectation is that you are doing the right thing. So unless they are worried about you because you are on the ground and like making a sad sound, they're not going to like pay that much attention to you being on the ground. And they're not going to pay that much attention to you not getting in the elevator with them if you aren't looking like you're disgusted with them or whatever. They're going to always assume you have a good reason. And often, I mean, if it's me, I'm going to assume I'm doing something wrong. What was it about the advice that you felt like was...
But you were, that was it. It was just the idea that there could have been a reason that you didn't get on the lift and didn't have to do with not wanting to share it with them.
Yeah.
And if that had been a reason, I wouldn't have felt bad. So why do you feel bad?
Right.
Hope people can get something out of that. Help.
We're in a real studio in Copenhagen.
Yes.
With my friend Owen, who just smiled in a way that you could almost hear, but you couldn't. Can you say hi? Is the microphone, your microphone on?
Yes.
We're a sultry tone.
We're in a real studio, in real life, really next to each other with my friend Owen, who I have another podcast with. This is the Coping in Copenhagen studio where we do our podcast called Coping in Copenhagen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's me. I'm Abby Wamba.
Are you about to do the podcast and now? Do you want me to leave?
Sophie.
Thanks, Sophie. We'll take over here.
We thought we'd just lure you in.
And I'm Marius.
Sophie listens to it.
I do listen to it.
Yeah, it's a nice podcast. Anyway, hi Owen.
Hi, guys.
If you sense a masculine presence, it's me. And Owen's also here.
Help hole. I would like to make our usual disclaimer.
Yeah.
It's just a note to say we can't do this podcast without these books that people have spent years researching and writing, and there's usually always value in reading an entire book rather than just a summary. So do go support the authors and buy the books. This is not a review podcast. We love books like these and just talking about them, just like talking about them. And if you don't like what we have to say about the books, buy them anyways, because we might be wrong.
You know what I thought of in the shower before I was coming here? I was like, you know what? We should do the regular disclaimer, but we should do it about like the country of Denmark. Because like today we are doing a book, but we're doing a book like as like a vague foil.
Yeah.
For talking about like the self-help things you can get out of the country of Denmark.
Yeah.
Just a note to say, we can't do this podcast without this country that people have spent years researching and
building.
Creating. There's usually always value in
going
an
to visit,
entire country.
Going to visit the country instead of just hearing about it on a podcast.
Yes.
So do go support the country and buy the country. Go buy the country.
Because even if we have bad things to say about this country, we might be wrong. We're not wrong.
We're not wrong.
But today we are presenting The Little Book of Hygge, Danish Secrets to Happy Living by Mike Viking.
His actual name is Mike Viking.
His actual name is Meek Weeking.
No, Mike Viking.
Do you really say that name?
I looked
Mike?
It up how to pronounce it. It's spelled M-E-I-K.
M-E-I-K. M-E-I-K.
And it's pronounced Mike.
Mike Viking.
Yeah.
That is so cute.
And also Viking is spelled Viking. But apparently said Viking. It's all very confusing. It's a special episode. The book has a title that makes me want to kill myself. And it's not a self-help or self-improvement book, really, is it? It's more of a vibe. The book is a vibe, I think.
Well,
there's a lot of pictures in it.
I think in our vague definition of self-help or self-improvement, it definitely fits. We did pick it. Yeah, as an excuse, since Sophie is from Denmark and now lives in the UK, and I live in Denmark, but I'm from the United States of America. I would love it, Amanda, if you could just make the national anthem play underneath this whole part while I'm talking. It would be really great.
Of which country?
My country, the United States of America.
Amazing.
That's Amazing Grace.
I don't know what your national anthem is. What's the national anthem?
There are a few that could work. One is...
Wait, what do you mean?
I mean, Oh Say Can You See by the Dawn's Early Light.
Is that the national anthem?
I hope so. You know, there's lots of America songs that would be fine. Like Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen would be fine. You can play that under here.
I think it might get copyright issues.
No, Bruce, the boss would never do that to me.
The boss. Here's the first thing I've learned from this book. Is I really wanted to hate it. I think I have a really grim internal nationalism. So like whenever anyone talks about Denmark, I'm like, oh yeah, what do you know? And this whole like glorification of Hygge and the capitalization of Hygge is really annoying. Like in the UK, there's just Hygge candles and Hygge blankets. And it's just this, the point of Hygge is that you can't buy it. It's a feeling. It's a so like when you see a book about it, I'm just like, I get really annoyed. But then you read about Mike Viking and the Institute of Happiness where he works and you're like, oh, he's a nice, happy guy trying to do nice, happy things. And I don't want to shit all over that. But I kind of do a little bit.
I do feel like he seems sincere.
Yeah.
But it is like a whole book that is like repeatedly telling you, have you ever tried nicely woven socks?
Yeah, like the candle.
I think that he gets the vibe of Hygge correct, where he says things like coziness is like the closest English translation, but he says again and again that it's like the more rustic, the less that you had to buy, that is the thing. You can't like buy it.
Yeah.
That's correct, but then it's also like a book that you can buy that tells you how to do it, and really it is like, have you guys heard of soup? you know what's cozy? Soup.
That really sums up the book. It's like, part of Hygge is hot drinks. Here's a list of hot drinks. Here's a statistic about countries and how much hot drinks they drink. Here's a recipe for a hot drink. Here's a description of what a hot drink is.
But I
how hot can a drink be before it's no longer hot? It's like, okay, we get it. We get it. You would think that Danes like tea, but actually, they like coffee. Here's an example of how they like coffee. And it's a bit like, okay, when are you going to mention socialism?
Yeah, and they do on the last page. They're like, and maybe it also helps.
Abby, you sent me a list of books from Goodreads. And at first I was like, oh, this is the problem. It's like all these books exist that are called The Little Book of Lykke, The Art of Making Memories,
and Lykke is Happiness.
My Hygge Home, Little Book of... And I was like, oh, I read through The Key to Happiness. And it's all the same guy. He's written so many little cute books.
Yeah.
About like coziness and Hygge and Lykke. And that's the thing. We were both reading the book thinking, okay, I can say stuff about this one. But it was Hygge-lit to read it.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a vibe. I don't think it's meant to be a book of facts and political opinions. No. I think it's just meant to be, ironically, cuddle up with a nice book in a warm pair of socks in a corner with a fireplace.
Yeah. And the guy who wrote it, Mike Viking, is the CEO of the Happiness Research Institute. He's a research associate for Denmark at the World Database of Happiness and a founding member of the Latin American Network for Well-Being and Quality of Life Policies. This is like his side hustle, writing these books about these things. And he is like doing scientific research about what makes people happy, why. Yeah. And they're based in Denmark because Danish people consistently rank as one of the happiest groups of people in the world. And he talks a little bit, like the tiniest bit, about that at the end. I think that's the thing, is like we both would be more interested in hearing more about how those surveys are done and how that's like that kind of thing. And they talk just a little bit about, of course, like happiness is not a quantitative thing. It's like a feeling, and everybody's idea of what happiness is and how happy they are different. And they talk about the ways that they do the ratings, and that's like a little bit where they talk about socialism and all the benefits that Danish society gives you and how that is contributing to the general well-being of a population. And the answer is a lot.
Yeah.
I think the way that we feel about this book is like, it's simplifying something that's really like interesting and good and important to talk about. And also, it feels like it's kind of buying into that you can just have this feeling if you do a puzzle by candlelight. And there is a component that's like, yes, a puzzle by candlelight is like the hygge feeling. But like underneath that, the people doing the puzzle by candlelight only worked 36 hours this week, have 5 weeks off of a year, have never paid for braces for their children, have 52 weeks paid parental leave. Like there's just like a underlying base of safety that makes that feeling possible.
It's really hard to sit and do a puzzle if you're afraid you can't pay your rent and you have three jobs and and you're on in the queue to the NHS to try and get life-affirming care and it's not happening. And I think that's what, when people like, oh, buy the candle, buy the hygge candle. It's like, or vote for a more socialist party and try and get like a proper infrastructure in place.
When we were going to the Happiness Museum, I was like, I will say that if we're going to do a podcast about self-help, I must admit that the most wonderful thing I did for my personal well-being was to marry and commit my life to a Danish citizen. Like I'm truly, really like leveled up a lot in what was possible for my life when I accidentally made that choice. Yeah. And it's still, and it's not easy. Truly, truly. I've lived here 6 years now. I'm still trying to get permanent residency. It is not a perfect place, but like the amount of just like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the whole bottom two tiers were just like checked off when came here. And then you left. So
I left. A decision that seems crazier by the day. I don't know. I will, because I'm back here now for like a week. One of the reasons that we did this book and not The Year of Living Danishly by Helen Russell. Helen Russell? Is that her name?
Yeah. Helen Russell?
Was that I began reading that. That's more of like a book and not as much of a picture book. And I was just like crying. I was like, oh no, I miss Denmark too much. I can't read this whole book about like a woman moving to Denmark. So I thought I was going to come back here for a week and then be like, oh shit, I need to stay. But not really. Yeah. I still think there are some things that feels a bit too small now.
Small in Denmark.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on it. I wish the UK had all the good bits of Denmark, the infrastructure.
When you say infrastructure, what do you mean?
I mean bike lanes. I mean bike lanes. You can technically ride your bike in the UK, but you have to like swerve between buses and cars. And it's like, it looks insane. Like I'm absolutely not doing that. I don't know. I just feel like every single dentist and doctor and hospital I've gone to in the UK has looked like in a zombie film when they wake up in a hospital and it's like abandoned. There's like a wheelchair spinning in the corner without a wheel. And you're like, oh my God, everything's like rusty falling apart because there's no funding to the NHS. And it just feels like a bit grim. When I got off the plane and I took the tube in, the metro, it was so clean and bright and white and roomy and spacious. And in Denmark, there are bins everywhere. In the UK, they don't have bins because at
like
some...
Like trash cans?
Yeah. Because at some point, someone threw bombs in the trash cans. And now they're like, no, we can no longer have trash cans.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah. Well, that's what I've been told.
Carried my trash up from the freaking tube station. I was like, are you... There's not one anywhere.
No bins.
Which is crazy, though, too, because like, didn't... I mean, we're stuffing a lot of bleak stuff into the happiness episode. But like, my friend works for TFL, and he was like, because trash on the things like start fires, like it's so bad. But if you had a trash can, that might help.
But then I don't even know which terrorist group did this. But I was like, but you just have fewer trash cans. They can still find one. All they need is one trash can. It's not like they're going to go.
I don't even have like the mental space to consider like bombs or trash. Like, yeah, all you need is one trash can. All you need is one trash can for a bomb.
Then they'll bring a bucket then. Like, that's not what's more important.
But that's why there's no trash cans.
Your entire population carrying trash in their buckets.
It is kind of crazy.
The whole day. It's a wild thing. Anyways, I still think there are good things that we can learn from Danish culture. Apart from socialism and infrastructure and funding the NHS.
And trash cans.
And get some bins.
Yeah. I think so too. But also, and I have really come to appreciate some things about Danish culture that I thought maybe I never would.
Mm-hmm.
But also some things that I've learned that I really appreciate, like some things I've learned about myself that I really value, I have definitely been able to point at because they are lacking here. Like even just last week I was in London and I was staying with friends and I had such a nice time with them. And I was just saying like, oh my God, when I got back at night, I was like, oh my God, it's so nice. Just here, like people will smile at you and smile. They're like, here, people are who's smiling at you? They feel like English culture is so like, or at least in like London, they feel like nobody's smiling back or waving. And I just feel like I like made eye contact and had like warm, just like tiny interactions with people so much more frequently than I do in Denmark, where it is really like a cultural value to not like, and I really do think this is the way Danish people think about it, to like not overstep by like even making eye contact with you. Like it's like politeness that keeps them from like having a nice moment with you. Like they don't want to like intrude upon your day. I really think it
is. You mean in Denmark?
Yeah, in Denmark. I
never thought of that as politeness. It's more of a you do you, I do me.
Yeah,
but we don't need to connect. We don't need to talk.
I feel like there's something behind it, like giving you your privacy. Maybe I'm just giving.
Maybe
I'm talking about it like that to myself because that makes me like think of them as warmer in like a way when I feel like no connection. I'm like, but you're connecting with me by not connecting with me, right? But I think there is something where it's like when I'm in the UK, we were having breakfast together in London the other day. There were two people walking by who just like looked really cool. They were wearing really bright clothes. And like I made eye contact with one of them and we smiled and we waved at each other like through the window. And you were like, that guy's going to be thinking about you. You ruined that guy's day.
Yeah, because I would be like, who was that? Why do they know me? Why? Who was it? Oh, shit. I forgot someone. Should I have gone back? Why were they? Is it because I'm dressed weird? Like, oh, I shouldn't have worn this.
And I was just like flying. I was like, oh, my God, eye contact. Wow. Someone waved at me through a window. Like, and like, I'm just like going around London planting that in everybody's head because they will look at me in the face. And I'm like, thank you. Hello. I do miss that kind of warmth between strangers, like those tiny interactions.
Yeah, that's what Denmark is criticized for a lot.
Yeah.
I'm just being quiet. It's one of the hardest countries to make friends in if you're not Danish.
Don't look at me so like deeply when you say that. It is funny though.
Single-handedly.
I made friends with you. You're Danish. You left.
Maybe that's why we're friends.
Yeah.
I had to leave Denmark to really appreciate you. We can't live in the same country and be friends. That would be way too much.
That would be too much.
Too much Abby.
Whoa. Too much Abby. Too much Sophie.
No, but that is what I like about the UK is you can be more invisible, I think.
You can be more invisible in the UK?
I feel like in Denmark, you walk around the corner and it's like your cousin and someone you fucked and your former teacher and it's all the same person.
There we go. Oh, that's Sophie's fucking cousin.
You have mutual friends with everyone.
Yeah.
Like if you've been alive for a few years in Denmark, you know, everyone knows someone who knows someone. And that can feel a bit ugh.
Unless you're from another country and then everyone just keeps you out. Then you know no one.
You have no friends at all.
No one at all. But that is something too, like in Danish, because it's small, a lot of people like start out in their kindergarten class. They stay in the same class. My kid who's like in fifth grade, she's been in the same class with the same kids for that whole time since she was in zero grade, they call it here. So 6 years, same kids. There are other classes. Her school is bigger than that, but they keep them together on purpose to like create these close friendships. I was a teacher in America, and that is so not the way that we do it there. I worked at a really small school where there was only one class, so everybody, it was like that. But in bigger schools and public schools, you purposefully change the classes every year so that kids make friends with different kids.
Oh, really?
And you think about like who to put with who, and if there's somebody who like, I mean, teachers are endlessly thoughtful and hugely underpaid, but like they are thinking about these things sometimes well, sometimes not so well. Here, they choose to keep the kids together. And then as they grow up, there is kind of like a way that's like, there's a sense in Danish culture that's like, I already made my friends when I was five. I don't know if I have space for another friend.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Across this anyway, like, people have been really like warm and open to me, but they seem surprised by my friendliness. They're like a little taken aback, and then they consider it. I'll be like, hey, we should have coffee sometime, and they'll be like, all right, let me just think about like whether I can take on another friendship.
Mike Viking in the book talks about how Denmark people are incredibly social. There's a lot of social stuff happening. That's rubbing in your face, Abby.
I get invited.
But a lot of it, like the perfect amount of people is like 3 or 4 people.
Yeah.
So that it's not like big group things or big parties or anything. It's more like the 4 of us get together. So maybe they are going, oh, I don't know about that, Abby. Yeah. I only have 4 chairs. I can't buy another chair.
I think that's a nice thing about Danish culture. They really do value like little groups and like little sweet things you can do together. And that's like a big focus of the book is like board games. Love a board game. Love a board game. Love a puzzle. You're invited if it's like the amount of people that can fit on a couch. Help, oh, help, oh. Another thing about Danish culture, and this is another thing where it's like when you have the societal safety to do these things, you know what's a great idea? Joining a club. You know, yeah. Who doesn't have time to join a club? People who are working 60 to 70 hours a week,
yeah,
to pay for health insurance for their kids. But it is like in Danish culture, that's how people make friends. Adults join clubs, a badminton club, things that are just like in America, clubs or hobbies. I feel like this is true. Let us know if you feel. Yeah. I feel like clubs and hobbies are like embarrassing as an adult. Like if it's not a hustle, like if you're not trying to make money from it, like scrapbooking is like a thing. People kind of like roll their eyes. But doing something for fun, it means you're soft. It means you have enough time to do things for fun as an adult. Children. Or therefore, like rich people. And if you are just like a normal person doing something, you kind of like roll your eyes at it a bit. Like I've had friends who are like in a kickball club or like do intramural soccer. It is cool, but like there is some kind of acknowledgement that that's like a soft thing to do, to have a hobby. I felt like starting stand-up comedy was humiliating. We've talked about this before. But I think that was in part because of this American idea I have of like grown-ups work and maybe you read books or you like do things for other people, but like hobbies for your own enjoyment or like to learn something, that's not for you.
I find that so fascinating. There's nothing negative about joining a club. It's like a lovely thing.
It is, absolutely. But also like I think it really just comes from the fact that like to have the amount of time to do that, to have the resources to do that, it means you're like rich and snobby and bratty, or it means you are a child. That's
amazing. I would love to join it. I would love to. Would I? Yeah. I like the idea of a club.
It should be a really nice thing to do. Yeah. It absolutely should. Help.
You mentioned school before. Can I just say that's another thing? I am not one to tell people how to raise their kids.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. If I was ever going to raise a child in the UK, which I would not do, not just because it's UK, because I don't want kids. It's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. I would raise them with the knowledge that I grew up with, which is that teachers are not sir and ma'am and madam and, the deepest respect for my... Of course, we should all respect people in general, but not just teachers. But we call our teachers by their first names and talk to them as if they were human beings, and they talk to us as if we were human beings. What I see in, like, UK... From people I know who have kids in the UK... That first of all, there are so many competitions. all of the kids are like, oh, they won the award for best thing. And I was like, she's 6 years old.
Yeah.
What do you mean she won an award? Yeah, for like most attentive student.
Most attentive student.
Did most, her homework really, like it's, there's so many awards and like medals and stuff. And it's all like divided by gender, which I also don't think we do in Denmark. There might be some schools that do, but not really. Where everyone I know have gone to like an all girls school or an all boys school, and it sounds scary. So scary. And everyone here just goes to the public school, which I think is what private schools are called in the UK. I don't know. But I would, if I raised a kid in the UK, I would teach him to rage against the machine.
That is a big thing from Danish culture, actually, that I really love, is the way that adults treat children, talk about children, the way that children are like not even just like allowed in public spaces, but valued in public spaces. That is a huge cultural difference, I think, that is like really, really positive. And in the happiness book, actually in the Hygge book, they say like of all of the things in Denmark that people find the like coziest, the highest ranking things are spending time with young people, not even just their young people. Playing with children, reading with children, or near children. Like, it's really nice to see, like, the way that people speak directly to kids is really respectful and honest. The way that kids speak to adults, kids just curse here. They just, like, use adult language to the point where, like, when I take my kids back to America, I have to like remind them not to say the words they're used to saying all the time in front of their grandparents, who would be like horrified. They curse like at school. There's like a kid song competition here where like the 10-year-olds, and like it's on like the national TV thing, like the 10-year-olds are like fucking ba 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 ba, and nobody says a thing. It's just a word, and it's not given any extra power here, and it's not kept away from kids like they can't handle it. That's not the way that I was raised. I feel like it is another way of respecting kids, kind of. Like,
yeah.
It's not like I can say that, but you can't. They call their teachers by the first names, and they like swear in front of their teachers. And it's like they don't like curse at somebody.
Yeah.
They just like use the words.
That reminds me of the thing we talked about earlier, which was the nudity.
Yeah.
That I only just learned that it's not normal to have such a casual relationship with nudity as I have.
Yeah.
We were doing a photo shoot. Well, I am assuming that by the time you listen to this, you'll have seen our brand new logo. Let's see. So we did a photo shoot, and I have no words. I got naked. I didn't get naked. I got undressed. Didn't get undressed. I changed my clothes. That was the word. Was it you? And then you asked.
And okay? I was going to change my clothes.
Yeah.
And then you asked
the photographer, is it okay if I change my clothes? And I was like, that's such a weird thing to do.
I was going to take my shirt off. I was like, do you mind if I just take my shirt off here?
That blew my mind. I was like, that's such a weird thing to do. And then you were like, oh, you're so Danish.
So Danish. What a normal thing to do before you expose yourself to someone.
But you have to, the first flaccid penis
that Sophie saw in that room at that photo shoot was when...
when you got undressed. No, when I was like 8, I think I borrowed a movie, or maybe I stole a movie from the library.
I'm so glad that ended with movie. I was like, Sophie, I don't know what's happening here. Like, give us some.
From the library, and it was Nattevagten, The Night Watch. It was a very good horror film from like ages ago. And it's just a horror film, and I was 8. I wasn't allowed to see it, but I did anyways. And I was so close to the screen. And the first scene in this film is Nikolaj Coster-Waldau. You know him from Game of Thrones. Now an international superstar.
Is it the twin guy?
Twin? I've never seen it. He's, I don't know, maybe.
Okay.
Danish.
He's the one in love with his sister.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Yeah, okay.
His flaccid penis was on screen dangling for a whole scene. And it was so not, most Danish films, when you start them, someone is naked. And not in the sensual Hollywood, Kate Winslet on the Titanic kind of way where it's like, oh my God, a boob. But like just old men, dangly bits, like women with hair, just like normal bodies in a non-sexual situation. Just like, here's a body. It's a naked body and that's fine. Again, it's not like porn. It's not shown after 10 p.m. It's prime time. It's in kids shows. It's just naked people and it's fine. there's no weirdness around it. And I really, really like that.
Yeah, I like that being a parent here, my preteen kid, she's not concerned about like people seeing her body. And I definitely was by her age. Like she takes a shower after gym and stuff. And like, I would never have done that throughout high school. I like changed maybe in high school when I was like on the basketball team, I just like changed by the normal like lockers. But otherwise, like, it was very normal at my school to like go into a stall or like learned how to change under your shirt because it was so like how humiliating to be naked. And I'm just, I feel glad that my kids don't have that. I think that's really nice. And it's something that I never even considered that being an option when I was a kid, like just not feeling shame about your body.
And there's still, it's not like it's a sexism-less country at all. But there is just, like, of course, people still feel shame. Women are still shamed. There's still body type, body image standards and all of that. But there is just a bit more diversity in what we see on TV.
Yeah.
Which is really, like, I showed a friend of mine, there's a Danish comedy show called Ditte & Louise. And there was a clip of one of them having sex with a guy. And I showed it to my friend. And he was like, you were showing me porn. This is really young. And I was like, it's not. This is just like a regular Danish comedy show. Like, this is prime time. This is not. He was like, but you see the penis and the vagina. I was like, yeah, but it's funny as well. Like, they're making faces and stuff. And he was just so flustered by it.
Yeah.
I missed, because that feels like the opposite of tension. Like, I feel like there's a lot of people who have so hung up on a lot of sex stuff in the UK. And I feel it a lot more than I do here. Here is a lot more like, hey, want to bang? Okay, cool, let's do it. Hey, hey. Like, it feels more like that.
In case you were wondering what Sophie's been doing with her time in Copenhagen.
I've been saying, want to bang?
And hey, like, want to bang? Okay, let's do it.
And they're like, wow, you've vastly overestimated this country. Things have changed since you left. Help.
Want to hear some statistics?
I'd love to hear some statistics.
Okay. In this country that you love, where everybody's just like, want to bang? 179 rainy days a year. One thing about that is, another thing I think I have gotten from Denmark is that this thing that they always say is like, there's no bad weather, only bad clothes or something.
Is that a Danish saying?
Yeah. Or, I mean, maybe they say it other places, but they say it a lot here. But there is something now where I go back, where I've had like visitors come with their kids from America and then like go out with their kids in like sneakers and pants and just like a jacket. I'm like, oh my God, somebody get this kid a whole body snowsuit. I can appreciate when the weather is bad so often, the way that Danish people have learned to, that it's worth it to be outside and like that there are things that you can do to make being outside comfortable.
Yeah.
In all occasions. And then, and a key component of hygge is that you have been outside. Now you are inside and comfortable and safe. And that, like, that contributes to that comfort is that you were uncomfortable. That there's, like, this element of hygge, this coziness. It's more cozy if there's a storm outside and you are inside safe, or you were just outside in the cold and now you're inside getting cozy and you have no plans to go anywhere. That the discomfort provides like a necessary contrast. It's not just sloth, that there's like this like thing that you did and now you're doing nothing, or like you're doing something really cozy and that's.
Yeah. Oh, it makes me want to do it.
I know. I felt like that reading the book.
I walk in the snow and then I want to come back inside. I want a fireplace.
Yeah. Mike Viking was talking a lot about how like that's the best part of skiing. It's like skiing's fine, but mostly you ski so that at the end of skiing, you can like sit at a fireplace and drink hot chocolate and like see if that feels very Danish in a way. It's like you like do the thing and then you have the nice time.
Okay. Oh, this is wild. Isn't that a bit Atomic Habits of something about rewards, giving yourself like a reward. Like
tacking a nice thing onto the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is Atomic Habit-y as shit. Yeah.
Because I'm just imagining all the things that I would do if I could promise myself, like, and then you get to sit with warm socks and a nice hot cup of cocoa. Which is, by the way, a thing I've remembered. Chocolate milk is so much more a thing here than in the UK. It's really hard to find chocolate milk. And here, there's an entire fridge full of it in all supermarkets.
I don't understand this Danish thing with chocolate milk. Danish people like to eat a hot dog and drink chocolate milk. They're like chocolate milk. I never got into chocolate milk.
Oh, you're missing out.
But let me tell you this chocolate milk kind of thing. I got another statistic for you. Ready for this? On average, candy consumed per year in the European Union, 9 pounds, European average. In Denmark, 18 pounds, double the European average.
And do you know what it is in the US?
I don't want to know. We're talking about European averages.
Yeah, but do you not also want to know?
Yeah,
the
I
US?
Do. I do. I do.
8 pounds of candy in the US.
Less than the European average.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
No way. That is not the way I thought that was going to go.
But you're, no disrespect, your candy sucks.
No.
It kind of,
have you had a peanut butter cup? I'm sorry. Have you had a Reese's peanut butter cup?
But that's chocolate. That's not sweets. Isn't that a different thing?
It is weird the way that you guys like candy. I feel like also
but
like.
It's so good.
I don't know.
Are you kidding?
I don't like it. But they do this thing. You do this thing where you're like, everything is a Friday thing. That makes more like. You
Friday
have
candy.
Friday candy. You have Friday bar. You have Friday all of these things. Yeah. And like all these special things you get to do on Friday.
Yeah.
Which makes it better. Yeah. And more hoogly, more like Danish.
But also, we have to; otherwise, we'd eat candy every day.
But you do eat candy every day.
Yeah, we also eat candy every day.
You just like on Friday, you eat more candy. You eat double the amount of candy.
Planned candy.
Planned.
It is weird that it's such a thing.
Also,
I had no
cake
idea.
Here, Danish pastries. They're called Danishes. Here, they're called
Wienerbrød, which means Vienna bread.
Yeah,
which is very funny.
Which I read in this book is because a Danish bakery started making them, but after they had visited Vienna, they were inspired by something in Vienna.
Oh, so it did originate here.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
But it was inspired.
But inspired by
their travels to Vienna. So it's like, I think that's kind of cute, isn't that cute?
That is very sweet. I did not know that.
These people love cake. They love candy. They love sugar. Those things make things
hoogly.
Hoogly.
Yeah. Help. The best part of this book was the chapter on lighting, which is the first chapter. He gets explicit about what makes things good lighting.
Yeah.
And it's warm light, like yellow light, pockets of it, rather than overhead lighting.
Yeah.
And I really was like, this book was off to a very strong start because the Danes do have the strongest lighting game. I never even cared about lighting before I moved here. Now I am an absolute snob. And it is something that just like never occurred to me before, but it's something because it's dark so much of the year here. For a quarter of the year, it's light for like 4 or 5 hours a day. And these like little pockets of like warmly lit places have a huge impact.
Yeah. It's wild. I only recently, it's one of those things I hadn't thought about until I moved to another country. And then I got one of those smart lights where I can go from like bright white light to like warm yellow.
Yeah.
The change in vibes.
Yeah.
Of just going from, because I cook in like the white light because I want to see what I'm doing. And then when I eat in the kitchen, I turn it to yellow. And oh my God, it's so hygge.
I'm going to give you the 4 most hygge things that I felt like this book actually made me notice.
Okay.
The lighting thing was one.
Yeah.
One was he tells a story about his friend who's studying to be a midwife.
Yeah.
When she's studying to be a midwife, one of the professors tells the class that they should, because they're like attending births, some of them are home births, some of them are in a hospital. They instruct the class that a good thing for them to learn how to do would be to start knitting, to take up knitting, because it's like a hygge activity that they can do and be present. You're still like listening. You don't, it doesn't distract you, but it calms the like birthing person down to know that you're like engaged in another activity, but still present. And then the next day, the next time that this person studying to be a midwife had class, like half of the students were like learning to knit. But I was just like, that is such a good example of like the ultimate hygge. And I think that's something he says again and again in the book, like homemade, rustic, the least amount of money you can spend on something, the more like do it yourself, the more it is like that. And that kind of activity where you are present, but like present in a different way, where you're engaged together in separate things, is like the ultimate.
That's a really good tip.
Yeah. Love that one.
Can I give a practical tip?
Is it about knitting?
It's not about knitting.
What is it?
A lot of people come to Denmark and they talk about smørrebrød, so like the open sandwiches.
Yeah.
And act as if we cannot get it in the UK. And because I live in the UK, and I'm like, I don't think people understand how big of a part rye bread plays in Danish society. It is a staple. It would be like if you moved to another country and they didn't have bread in general. Like, it's such a... Why are you looking at me like that? You look just, so smug.
Yeah, I feel smug.
Why are you smug? Because you have access to rye bread?
Constant access to rye bread. I also do, like, a whole, like, 5-minute bit on rye bread right now that I think I, like, sent it to you when I was first thinking about it. And you were like, what is funny about this?
I am so... Because it's, like, the one thing... It's... Even though I've lived in the UK now for 12 years, rye bread is the one thing I cannot get over not having. You can still do it. There's rye bread at Ole & Steen, which is mainly in London, but you can also buy rye bread that you can bake yourself, and it's super easy, from Scandi Kitchen. This is all UK, but I'm sure in whatever country you're in, there will be ways of getting your hands on rye bread. You can freeze it, put it in the toaster, and it's as good as new.
Or you just don't have to eat it at all because it's like torture.
What do you mean? Do you not like
it? No, I do like it. I do like it. I like rye bread now. I didn't like it when I moved here. Now I like it, but it's just like, it's one of those things where, like, I'm not sure why I like it. I'm not sure if I should. It feels like how I also like the smell of my own farts. That's how I like rye bread.
I'm so offended.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to write the Danish embassy. Get this freaking yank out of my
country. Get this freaking yank out of here.
I just want to say it's super simple. The toppings can be very simple. We have all of the ingredients.
Oh, my God.
If you have the rye bread.
She's still going.
I'm just saying. It's pate with cucumber. Done.
Oh, my. Do you know that Sophie has me bring mayonnaise?
Yeah, but it's because the Danish mayonnaise is superior. I can't have the English one. Apparently, the Polish one is close to it, but I can't. I'm just saying, pate with cucumber, eggs with mayonnaise and cress. Done. You're done. You have a fried cod with remoulade. You can get remoulade in places as well. Then you have a full Danish meal, and it's delicious and
Amanda,
nice.
Feel free to cut all of this
Amanda,
out.
Do not cut that out. That is essential knowledge.
I feel like a lot of the hygge stuff is like forts, like building forts when you're little. Like making a small space and putting everything you need in it and thinking to yourself, I'm not going to leave until tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's like kids understand this thing so much. And like Danes have just moved it into adulthood in this really nice way. And they also really appreciate that about kids, like tree houses, playgrounds. They're really good at thinking about the way that kids like to do this thing.
If Harry Potter was set in Denmark, he would have the big room. And the kids that were favored would have the little cozy room under the stairs.
Oh, yeah. They would love that.
That's a lovely little place.
I started agreeing with you before I had any idea what you were going to say. I was just like, if Harry Potter was... Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I wasn't sure where to go with it.
I was like, what's going to happen? But I agree. Whatever. This part? Yes. There was something in this book where I was like, that's such a good one. They were like high up, small places where you can see out a window is like ultimate hygge spot. And we just had lunch a place like this. And it really felt true, right? Like we were encased by a windowsill. So it felt like cozy and small.
Yeah.
And we could look out over this like beautiful, it was the top floor of Magasin du Nord. You can go there and you can get just a coffee. You don't have to even spend like, I mean, still it's expensive because it's Denmark. It's like $6. It was so nice. And that was what he was saying is like, there's something evolutionary about like feeling protected and having a good view. So you are like up high, it feels small and you're enclosed, but you can see out a lot and that feels like really cozy and safe.
Yeah. And can I just that word safe? There was one page in the book where he was like, I think maybe safety is hygge. And I was like, ding, ding, ding. Yeah. That is what I had not been able to put into words, what hygge is. It's safety. And I think hygge, the way we define it in Denmark, would automatically happen everywhere if they felt safe. And I mean that from like financially safe in their jobs, you know, healthcare free education, etc. All of those things, like social safety. I think everyone would start knitting and taking up clubs. And
that's the thing is like, it's so interesting to like be looking at this and being like, this stuff will add value to your life. It is like a good way to spend your time, but it is brought to you by socialism, to you by all your bases covered. That's the thing is like, this is true. And if you can spend time making small moments matter, it will improve your life.
Yeah.
But also there has to be some kind of recognition, or you just sound silly.
Yeah.
The reason that people are so good at that here is because they are not worried about how they will get to the doctor if they are sick.
Yeah.
They are not worried about where they are going to live. They are not worried about paying for college.
Yeah.
And he keeps saying again and again, like, there is something that's extra hoogly about being safe when there's a storm raging outside. And it does feel like that's, in a way, what Denmark feels like all the time. Like, and not everybody feels safe in Denmark. Again,
of
like,
course.
Yes,
yeah.
There are shitty things in Denmark, but I could start a career in the arts as a 35-year-old because I moved to this country and no longer had to worry about how to cover my kids' basic needs. Then when I say I felt silly starting stand-up comedy, it's, I couldn't have before.
Yeah.
So it's like the possibility of this whole conversation, it's not like you can't just do this in your regular life. You can. It is like really nice to be actually in a room with people and working on your actual relationships that will make you happier. Again and again in this book, he says the number one predictor of happiness is your relationships. If you feel good about your relationships, you will feel happier. Having hoogly moments, moments where your phone is not there, you are working on something in the space with the people who are there, are going to make your relationships better. That is going to make you feel happier. That is going to be easier if you have a government that supports it. Absolutely. Yeah. But like, it is true. You can do it.
Yeah.
I feel like we both feel like it's really important to acknowledge it's a lot easier for some people to do it.
Yeah.
And those people are me. Help hold. They said that thing about gratitude, though. We hear this a lot. Gratitude is an actual thing that can make you happier. But what he said about it that kind of felt like that aha moment about that we kind of find in each book, we're so used to newness. Our brains are always hunting for new things.
Yeah.
So it's hard to, like, keep appreciating the same good thing you have in your life. When I write gratitude lists, like, I have to, like, write, like, a specific thing my partner did. I love my partner. I'm so grateful for him. Yeah. I'm sick of being grateful for him. He's great all the time. I have to like think, oh, I'm really grateful he took the kid to school today or like whatever. It has to be specific because it helps to be new. And that, I think, is what the pursuit of hygge can bring to you, is you are looking at these like regular comforts as like their own activity and their own event. And that pursuit of newness in old, like normal things can like turn up your relationship to like gratitude and like your relationship to what's happening right now. Even just like calling hygge instead of just like calling it knitting, it just like puts a different frame on something that's old that can make you appreciate it a different way and appreciate how you're spending time with people and how you are doing it. It's just like calling your dinner table a dinner club and you're like, well, now it's a thing.
He mentions as well the hedonic treadmill, which is this thing of how we
God, again, the hedonic treadmill.
Well, it comes up a lot because it's really important, right? This thing of...
No, I'm just kidding. I've never heard that before. I didn't.
Yeah, you have. We've talked about this.
Okay.
Must have talked about it before. It's this thing of constantly searching for happiness. It's not going to make you necessarily happy. It's the same thing about enjoying what's in the moment and in the present instead of constantly being like, new stuff, more, because you're not actually moving towards something because you're on a treadmill.
Oh, see? A treadmill. Heard of them. Thank you for listening to Help Hole.
This has been a bit of a special episode. If you liked it, it's a bit more similar to some of the stuff you put out on Patreon, some of the bonus episodes. So if you are into it, you might want to go and support our Patreon.
Yeah, and if you want to hear more about me talking about Denmark, you can listen to my other podcast called Coping in Copenhagen. Hi, Owen.
Hi.
He's been here the whole time.
Good, he's so quiet. He was a quiet boy. Yeah. We're trying to get 233 Patreons.
Yeah.
So that we don't any longer lose money on this podcast. 233 would be great. That would just mean we're no longer losing money on this podcast. I'll say it one more time, just losing money on this.
We don't want to sound ungrateful, but it would be great to not lose money. I'm doing the podcast.
It would be great to keep being able to do this podcast because we're not losing money on the podcast. So if 133 of you more want to join Patreon, we would be so grateful. And a big, big thanks to our two Patreon producers. And that is Lily and my mom, who is, again, Sophie thinks I should stop saying this. The reason we pronounce it Patreon, okay? We know.
I mean, at this point, they either get it or they don't. We also want to say thank you to... Well, I was going to say the Happiness Museum, but they didn't give us a press pass.
No, we don't want to thank them at all.
We're not going to say thank you to them, but we want to say thank you to our wonderful producer, Amanda Redman, and to Nikki Ellison for the jingle, and to Owen for sitting in the studio with us and being very quiet and polite.
Oh, be so quiet. We also like you when you talk, Owen. I don't know why we're talking like this. That's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.